You're listening to WGXC Acra, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowan Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and today we have a discussion about digital art with Tali Hinkes of Lovid and Mad Penny of Art Blocks. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after Jason Martin has finished singing this song. Then it's time for the local news on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
News. This is the news. This is the network. Network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news. This is the network.
This is the
news.
This is the network.
Turn out to Tubby's in Kingston on Saturday, November 5th for drone performances from Greg Davis, Hudson's M. Geddes Gengris, Troy's Ben Saraton, and Jay Ashdown. They all perform drones at Saturdrone at Tubby's in Kingston on Saturday, November 5th from 8 to 11 p.m. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org for more information.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Oak Pizzeria Napolitana in Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here. Jeanette Wolfberg reports for the Columbia paper that the Columbia County Board of Supervisors has authorized the Solid Waste Department to increase the minimum charge for disposing of garbage at its transfer stations from $1 to $3 a bag, thereby eliminating the $1 tag from use. The increase was approved by the full board at its meeting on October 12th. However, the price hike will not take effect until county officials work on accommodating those residents who regularly use the dollar bags. The pay-as-you-throw charge does not include the cost of the bags themselves, which are available from local stores. The tags are purchased from the county and are placed on each bag before the bag or bags are disposed of. The dollar tag is for bags that hold 10 gallons or less. $3 bag holds 13 to 30 gallons, and $5 bags contain 33 to 55 gallons of garbage. The county's October 12th decision will eliminate the dollar tag. Since September 2021, anyone disposing of trash at transfer stations must buy both bags and tags instead of bags alone, as was the practice for years. Other counties have and places have also made this change, county officials said. At the October 12th Board of Supervisors meeting, Supervisor Ron Knott of Stuyvesant said, quote, solid waste gets funded with a lot of tax dollars and people complain, unquote. He added that at budget meetings over the years, people spoke of the need to increase solid waste fees, quote, and we kept putting it off because we didn't want to impact our residents. We need to increase the fees or offset them with taxes, unquote. But Canaan Supervisor Brenda Adams said the change, quote, will have little or no impact. It's symbolic, unquote. Copaic Supervisor Janie Medler said the problem is that some people are, quote, throwing in big garbage bags with a dollar tag or no tag, unquote, while the measure penalizes people who generate only a small bag amount of waste each week. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper.
The Times Union reports about the loan debate between Republican Liz Joy and Democrat Paul Tonko held October 27th for the 20th congressional district election. Tonko, an incumbent, cast himself as a defender of democracy, while Joy actually attended the Stop and Steal rally in Washington, D.C. on January 6th that led to an attempt to violently overthrow American democracy. Joy also opposes basic public health, saying all of society should be put at risk so that vaccine skeptics can avoid getting a safe injection to protect themselves and others. Tonko, by contrast, said that people should be vaccinated for COVID-19, measles, polio, and other dangerous diseases. Joy also claimed she would vote against a federal ban on abortion, but Tonko accused Joy of supporting bans on abortion with no exceptions and said he supports abortion rights. The new 20th Congressional District covers Albany County, Schenectady, Troy, and Saratoga Springs, with voting this year from October 29th to November 8th. Read the full story in the Times Union.
Mid-Hudson News reports that the town of Red Hook's proposed 2023 budget lowers the tax rate by 17% in an attempt to offset an increase in residential assessment rates. But the preliminary spending plan also includes a $25,000 raise for the town supervisor. Town Supervisor Robert McKeon's budget memo stated that financial experts are warning of a recession in the near future while noting, quote, this budget includes additional increases for those staff not included in the collective bargaining agreement, unquote, referencing the contract between the Dutchess County Town and its union employees. At an October 13th Town Board workshop meeting not attended by McKeon, Deputy Town Supervisor Bill Hamill discussed the increased workload and numerous responsibilities associated with the Office of Town Supervisor. According to the minutes, board members talked about adjusting the position to full-time with an increase in salary and the addition of benefits or a buyout option for the supervisor. They used the towns of East Fishkill and LaGrange as comparisons for the increase in salary. The four board members in attendance suggested that increasing the salary could encourage future supervisors to take the position on as a regular job if it was full-time. The board then voted unanimously to increase the supervisor's salary from the current $32,575 to $58,466 per year. The town clerk is scheduled to receive an increase of just under $1,800 next year. McKeon said the increases are an attempt to attract and retain valuable employees. The supervisor, now serving his second term, said, quote, the town budget is the seventh in a row with flat or lower taxes. The tax rate for the three main funds combined is proposed to be down 17% or $1.81 per $1,000 of assessed value, unquote, and noted that it is among the lowest in the county. Quote, in addition to holding the line, we've adopted programs including our community solar, which is currently saving residents hundreds of dollars annually, unquote. The board will hold a public hearing on the 2023 budget on November 2nd at Town Hall. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Victor Feldman reports for the Red Hook Daily Catch the differences between Republican Sue Cenero and Democrat Michelle Henchy, who are competing for the 41st Senate District seat. Both are current state senators, with Cenero representing the old 41st District and Henchy in the former 46th District. Redistricting has moved Henchy into the 41st District that includes all of Greene and Columbia counties and parts of Dutchess and Ulster counties. The two candidates participated in one debate hosted by the Daily Freeman and one candidate forum with the Ulster County Chamber of Commerce. Cenero ignored requests from the Daily Catch to participate in another debate, and the League of Women Voters also canceled a planned debate after Cenero declined their invitation. Henchy is a former marketing executive from Socrates, and Cenero is a high-parked-based realtor. They agree on virtually nothing.
Hinchey supports abortion rights, and Serino is against the medical procedure. They both bashed Central Hudson's electricity billing, though Hinchey pointed out that Serino gets campaign contributions from Central Hudson and voted in May against a bill to establish a utility customer advocate. Both candidates decried the lack of affordable housing in the area, but offered different solutions. Serino wants less oversight on developers. She said, and I quote, "It's because of Albany's bad policies that we are having a struggle with having affordable housing," end quote. Hinchey wants the government to encourage more affordable and workforce housing projects. Read more about this story in the Red Hook Daily Catch.
The Daily Freeman reports that Democrat Jen Metzger and Republican Jim Quigley, the two candidates for Ulster County Executive, will participate in a forum sponsored by the Ulster County Regional Chamber of Commerce on November 1st, 3 days after voting began. Both candidates will be given an opportunity to introduce themselves to members of the local business community and then answer questions about issues of importance to chamber members. The League of Women Voters will assist at the event. Metzger and Quigley are looking to fill the unexpired term of former County Executive Pat Ryan, who resigned in September to serve as a representative of New York's 19th Congressional District. Quigley is a certified public accountant and former chief fiscal officer of Rothschild Realty Management in New York City. He ran unsuccessfully for county comptroller in 2008 and has served as the town of Ulster supervisor since 2010. In addition to holding the Republican line, he will appear on the conservative line on the November ballot. Metzger is a former member of the Rosendale Town Board and served in the state Senate from 2019 to 2020. She is currently a member of the State Cannabis Control Board and of the Ulster County Land Bank. Metzger will hold the Democratic and Working Families Party lines on the ballot. The winner of the vote this fall will serve through December 31st, 2023. Read more about the story in the Daily Freeman.
The Daily Freeman reports that voting this year goes from October 29th through November 8th. On October 29th through November 6th, ballots will be cast at a limited number of locations and then is at precincts on November 8th. Early voting will be available from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Early voting will be available from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday, October 29th, Sunday, October 30th, Monday, October 31st, Wednesday, November 2nd, Friday, November 4th, Saturday, November 5th, and Sunday, November 6th. It will be available from noon to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, November 1st, and Thursday, November 3rd. In Greene County, voting October 29th through November 6th will be at one location, the fourth floor of the Greene County Office Building on Main Street in Catskill. In Columbia County, there are two locations for voting, 401 State Street in Hudson and the Martin H. Glenn Municipal Building at 3211 Church Street in Valencia. In Ulster County, voters may cast their ballots at the Midtown Neighborhood Center, 467 Broadway, Kingston, at the Ellenville Public Library, 40 Center Street, Ellenville, the Marlborough Town Hall, 21 Milltown Turnpike, Milltown, the New Platts Community Center, 3 Veterans Drive, New Platts, the Saugerties Senior Center, 207 Market Street, Saugerties, and the American Legion, 2628 Mountain Road, Shokan. In Dutchess County, voting through November 6th is at the Mid-Hudson Library Auditorium, 105 Market Street. In Poughkeepsie, East Fishkill Community Library, 348 Route 376 in Hopewell Junction, the Cornell Cooperative Center, 2715 U.S. 44 in Millbrook, the Broadmen Road Library, 141 Broadmen Road in Poughkeepsie, the Fishkill Town Hall, 807 Route 52, the Rhinebeck Town Hall at 80 East Market Street, and the Wappinger Town Hall at 20 Middlebush Road. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast for Monday, October 31st, and we start each renewable weather forecast off with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Mobil in Palenville is selling gas for $3.76 a gallon. That's the lowest price in Greene County, according to the Gas Buddy website. Then we look at the air quality forecast, which is a 20 for Monday, up from a 15 on Sunday, but still in the good range. And we look at the UV index, which is a 3 again on Monday, same as Sunday. That's at the bottom of the moderate range. The National Weather Service in Albany says Monday should be partly sunny with a high of 61, with some sunshine for the solar panels and the wind from the east around 5 miles per hour for the local windmills. Monday night, there's a 30% chance of scattered showers, mainly after 9 p.m., with cloudy skies and a low around 50. Tuesday, the scattered showers continue, 40% chance, with cloudy skies, high of 64 and a low around 50 on Tuesday night. Wednesday, it should be sunny with a high of 63 and a low around 42. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. Solar-powered radio for open ears. Monday, October 31st, tune in Halloween programming on 90.7 FM, WGXC, Scary Sounds, Spooky Stories, and more. That includes Brendan Donegan playing favorites at 11 a.m. with the Pentacle, live from the WGXC Hudson Studio, the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street. At 3 p.m., echolocation is Ringing Rocks with Liz the Judas. WGXC Afternoon Show is live from Western Massachusetts at 4 p.m. with Kieran Riley. Then at 6 p.m. on All Together Now, and all this week on All Together Now at 6 p.m. and 7 a.m., we've got a midterm election special every day with special reports about voting, when you can vote, how you can vote, and who you might want to vote for. We've got candidate interviews and stories about the election, about false claims and ads, and more. Then at 8 p.m., we've got special Halloween night programming, so tune in when you're out trick-or-treating or on your way back from a party for more spooky sounds on 90.7 FM, WGXC.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Turn out to Tubby's in Kingston on Saturday, November 5th. For drone performances from Greg Davis, Hudson's M. Geddes Gengris, Troy's Ben Saraton, and Jay Ashdown. They all perform drones at Saturdrone at Tubby's in Kingston on Saturday, November 5th from 8 to 11 p.m. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org for more information. Listening to Quintron's Weather Warlock. Live stream of an analog drone synthesizer played by the weather, made by the New Orleans-based artist Quintron. You can listen to the Quintron Weather Warlock take the changes in weather at Wave Farm in Greene County and hear it anytime, 24 hours a day, at wavefarm.org/listen. Go to any WGXC.org webpage and click on the listen button to hear Quintron's Weather Warlock, turning the changes in precipitation and sunlight and wind and temperature into sound.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, October 31st. currently 83.2% of the way through the year, 51 days left until winter. Local early morning temperatures range from 34 degrees in Durham to 45 in Kingston. Regional average soil temperature is 49 degrees. Almost 2,000 miles away near Flathead Lake, Montana, is where the snow flies today. Over in our little neck of the woods, we're going to shake off that chilly morning and hit 63 degrees by 3 p.m. Things should stay dry until about 9 p.m., after which rain chances show up. We get a low of 53 before a soggy morning Tuesday. A high of 66 happens at 3 p.m., and rain ends near dark. Overnight, we hit 52 degrees. Then on Wednesday, it's a high of 67, still dry, and that lasts into Thursday, which also sees a high of 67. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 2:39 a.m., high tide at 8:24 a.m., low tide again at 2:42 p.m., and high tide, once again, at 8:44 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 55 degrees, and the tide strength will be low. Sunset today will be at 5:39 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:23 a.m. Looking way up, we see that even though we are in a light plasma stream, things are pretty quiet with only a 5% chance of M-class flares today. Solar wind speed is currently 487 kilometers per second at 9.2 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 MHz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 68, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Alana Medlock of Kingston, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Early Electromix is a series to document the history of experimental electronic music from the 50s to the 80s. Pioneers who paved the way for what was to become techno, ambient, electronica, and most of what we are listening to. Essential Culture on air every Tuesday from 11 to 12 a.m.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
They think they can't be beat this time either. But we're going to make sure by working on the ground, knocking on doors, making phone calls, texting folks, because this is our time, and we have to take advantage of our time. Let's go!
With early voting already underway in midterm elections, Milwaukee, Wisconsin activists are rallying voters with the tradition of souls to the polls, encouraging Black church congregations to get out and vote. Organizers are hoping for an upset in the U.S. Senate race, where Wisconsin's Democratic Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes continues to gain ground against incumbent Republican Senator Ron Johnson. Georgia Democratic Senator and Reverend Raphael Warnock is also rallying volunteers.
Let's knock on some doors. Y'all ready to do it?
Yes.
Y'all ready to warm up?
Yes.
Y'all ready to warm up?
Yes.
Y'all ready to warm up?
Yes.
Warnock faces former football star Herschel Walker in another race that could determine the balance of the U.S. Senate. He and a group of volunteers spanned out across the state in support of his campaign, as well as that of Georgia's Democratic gubernatorial candidate, Stacey Abrams. She faced off against incumbent Republican Governor Brian Kemp in their final debate Sunday night on WSB-TV in Atlanta.
We have the lowest unemployment rate in the history of the state. We have the most people ever working in the history of our state. And we're seeing economic opportunity in all parts of our state.
Meanwhile, the conservative majority on the Supreme Court looks likely to undo rulings that allowed colleges to consider race in admissions. Before hearings on the cases involving Harvard and the University of North Carolina, rally speakers argued that affirmative action has helped increase the numbers of Black and Latinx students at some of the nation's most selective schools.
Affirmative action is necessary, it is urgent, and it is imperative for the Supreme Court to do the right thing and affirm diversity.
The group Students for Fair Representation brought the suits, arguing that the universities have discriminated against white and Asian American applicants. Former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva should once again lead Brazil after narrowly defeating current President Jair Bolsonaro, although Bolsonaro may try to stay in office despite the vote. Lula, a former union leader, is known for programs that have helped lift millions out of poverty and promises to end the illegal logging in the Amazon. Finally, several prominent Republicans cast blame for political violence on both political parties Sunday following the assault on Paul Pelosi, the husband of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Twitter CEO Elon Musk deleted a tweet he had posted earlier linking to a right-wing conspiracy site that questioned the circumstances surrounding the attack. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Our last installment for Why People Don't Vote Week discusses what solutions are being proposed to encourage eligible citizens to register and vote. The Center for American Progress outlined reforms which would encourage registration and voting. They include automatic voter registration to encourage registration at the DMV when obtaining a license or car registration. Oregon registered 219,000 new voters by AVR before the 2018 midterm, and 47% of them voted. Online voter registration, which includes submitting identification and other documents electronically, has eased the hassle for working people to register. A study in Georgia found that 71% of online registrants turned out to vote, higher than in-person or mail registration. Pre-registering 16 and 17-year-olds is effective in getting younger voters engaged. They can't vote until they're 18, but often schools can encourage future voting when coupled with civics education. Florida saw a 4.7% jump in youth voting as a result. Early voting and voting by mail helps all manners of people to vote, providing flexibility in schedules for parents and working citizens. In the last few weeks, Georgia has shattered its early voting records. What are your options for registering and voting? Contact your city or county election office or website for details. Articles and links to groups taking action are at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
All right, so this is Galen Joseph Hunter, and I am here with LoVid, with Tali Hinkes and Kyle Lapidus, and we're going to be joined in just a few minutes by Mads Piney from Art Blocks. And the reason we're here is because LoVid has just gone public with a partnership with Art Blocks on a project called Tide Predictor, which is a super exciting project that you're going to hear all about. And there's a added wonderful component, which is that this project is also partnering with Wave Farm and will be benefiting Wave Farm. So welcome, Kyle and Tali.
Thanks, Galen.
Hi, good to be here with you.
Hi, everyone over the airwaves.
Yeah, we can hear you. Okay. So first of all, LoVid and Wave Farm have a long history of working together. When did that start? Do you recall?
Well, I like to say that LoVid and Wave Farm have a history before LoVid and Wave Farm. It's a kind of a prehistory. So Wave Farm before in the free 103.9 days of radio, Kyle and I met in the first, the third year anniversary benefit. So our destiny's been intertwined from day
one.
It's
the very beginning. Amazing. Yeah. And you've done projects here in ACRA. I was just, for those listeners who have been to the Wave Farm property here in ACRA, New York, and experienced the installations, I was just here working with the artist behind Barrier and telling them about your planting project, your radio calendula project that was there in its location before.
Talk about that.
It's interesting to see sort of the interaction with nature of sort of, I guess, man-made objects in that sense versus in that same exact space where we had the plant-based materials for 705. That was really fun collaboration with, obviously, with Wave Farm, but also with the planet.
but land-based work and plant-based work in that literal sense is not typically your medium of choice, right? So tell us a bit about your work and your trajectory to where we are here with a Tide Predictor.
So when we started in the early 2000s, in like 2002, we were primarily live video and noise band, really, formed and played around the country and lots of around the world, playing originally found analog mixers and various devices. And then since 2005, we've been building our own analog audio video synthesizers. So the practice has been really started centered in live video and live audio, but throughout the years has evolved to, with that still core concept and aesthetics, has evolved to include installations, textile work, single channel pieces, including an installation that we did, outdoor piece that was at Wave Farm for several years, a collaboration with Douglas Repetto, which was using radio transmission and solar panels. So a lot of thinking of relationship between body, technology, nature, and signals, mm-hmm. in a sense.
Yeah. So we, our analog signals synthesizers work strictly with electrical signals that they generate from just pure electricity, and then obviously modulated both by our touch and by other environmental factors that just influence it. The project that we did with Wave Farm and Douglas was really using environmental signals in a variety of different ways. Including the solar panels, which were powering the outdoor work that we had at Wave Farm. And we've kind of been interested in these signals across multiple mediums, as Tali mentioned, for many years. And we're very interested in bringing some of the ideas from our analog synthesizers into the digital and into the blockchain, which has been an increasing interest of ours over the past several years through this project with ArtBlocks.
Your video work, and I don't know if you want to talk about your recent Postmasters show and your Hugs project, which is so wonderful, but we'll continue to tease our listeners for the ArtBlocks conversation, but I'm anxious to get there because one of the things I'm really impressed by is how the really like low vid aesthetic has been so consistent throughout your work, but you've figured out a way to translate it so beautifully into this generative space, and. So, I mean, maybe for our listeners who aren't familiar with what video analog signals are RGB, like maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
So with our synthesizers, we make very saturated, very intense, very colorful, very bright, very flickery, very loud, very extreme content.
And we only go to very.
Yeah. So, we have a maximalist aesthetic and then also minimalist at times. Recently, we were at an event, another Web3 related event, and someone was asking who had actually we had met upstate at RPI years back, was asking about a piece that we had done around the time when we built one of our first videos, when we built Synchromonica at iBeam. We made another piece called To Elroy, which is just a very slow fade from red to yellow over a 7-week period. And so that's obviously a very minimal approach, but we really like those extremes in any case.
And the colors, you know, so we work with, the palette starts with RGB, red, green, blue. That's basic analog signal. And so the word, you know, the more we work it, we can get to more complex color palette, but we really work with this, like, you know, old fashioned way of composing video. So even in our most recent work, like the Hugs or other things, we're always going back to analog synthesizer as our kind of tool, like our palette and our toolbox. And I do want to add a couple of things, maybe not on the aesthetic level, but on the concept and our connection. So New York State has a long history of support and been a fertile ground for experiment in video specifically, and a lot in this, our field of analog instruments through Experimental TV Center and from Video Freaks. And there's been this supportive community that's just really unique in the world, really. And some of the most incredible artists who have come, who are video artists and pioneers, were from different parts of New York State, and especially upstate Western New York. So we feel extremely connected to that legacy. And when we started making work in 2000, we really saw what we were doing as a continuation and a development of the pioneers, and not a kind of reinventing it. Mm-hmm. And that's been something that's been really important as we move forward with the blockchain, that what we do is really anchored in a continuation of something. And part of it for us is Wavefarm. And it's not just because of the support that we've received from the organization, but because our community that has followed us, supported us, that likes our intense, very of everything work that we do, is Wavefarm's community. And it's just really important for us that that's at the forefront and at the core of what we're doing with this project as well.
Well, that's lovely to hear. And Wavefarm feels grateful to be a part of the LoVid community too.
I wanted to just break it down just one drop further in terms of the synthesizers and everything, so, and the history. So we, as Tali mentioned, we started out trying to break video synth by sort of hacking and circuit bending various kinds of equipment that we could get, you know, either originally at garage sales or eventually on eBay and things like that. And then we got into building our own sync. Rather than trying to break it, because we were always interested in that sort of moment of the breakdown of the video before it would kind of go to blue on an old screen, and kind of found that some of our most interesting things would happen at that moment, which is how we got into the physical objects. And you mentioned Hold On and the other kinds of object-based work that we make as well. But the synthesizers that we chose to build when we first started at IBM, and pretty much what we've done exclusively since then, barring one other range of synthesizers that we built, our first ones with Douglas, which were distinct, but most of them have been basically working with NTSC video signal, which is an old, now an, a sort of antiquated video standard, but one that was used widely in America. We could have used PAL, which was used sort of contemporaneously in Europe, but we went with NTSC, being that we were in America and a lot of the other equipment we had was working on that signal. So in doing that, and the way that we produced it using an encoder, we would generate signals for R, G, and B, which is why we have those colors. And because we're working with sort of obscenely high voltages for that kind of range, we're working 24 volts peak to peak, just to geek out a little bit on it, we would really saturate, and hence the variness.
So let's get ourselves to Tide Predictor, and let's welcome Mad into the conversation. Mad, is the artistic coordinator at Art Blocks. Matt, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
We can. We've got a loud applause in the studio here, but now we can hear you just fine. Okay. So welcome. And let's give our listeners some basics. What is Art Blocks?
Yeah, so thank you so much for having me. And I just want to reiterate how excited Art Blocks is to bring LoVid to our platform. So Art Blocks is a platform that connects artists, blockchain technology, and collectors in a very symbiotic experience. So basically how it works is an artist will create an algorithm or a set of instructions and parameters, and basically mark, you know, how many invocations or pieces of this algorithm that will be output, and they upload it on chain. And the moment it's released, the collector will mint or purchase a unique NFT that's totally different from everything else in the collection, but kind of maintaining the same parameters and aesthetic and conceptual qualities that the artist brought forth in one experience. So it's a really unique application of blockchain to upload a generative algorithm on chain that produces X number of artworks that can only exist once the collector purchases it.
And I'm going to ask you some very silly basic questions, which I can pretend are for the benefit for our listenership, but in all honesty is because I'm not well versed in this at all. So my first question, well, I think actually Art Blocks is a fairly unique platform. So, you know, maybe it's okay not to be well versed, but when a collector mints, that the piece is generated is totally unique to that specific moment, because it's based on a series of criteria that have been, like, if I minted Tide Predictor right now, it would be a different NFT that I ended up with than if I did it in 30 minutes. Is that true?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. So basically how we kind of release projects is, you know, we invite an artist to work out a generative script, and then they basically play with it in a staging environment and kind of mimic the unique and random iterations that might come out of the algorithm. And then the artist will mint zero, which basically tells our technology and platform and services, like, this project is ready for the world. We have it scheduled, and we set a release date, and the project will open up. And generally, it'll be kind of an auction model. So the price will start high and gradually decrease to a lower number. And there's only, you know, a set amount of works that can be purchased. So for LoVid, there's 400 works. So you might have 1,000 interested collectors kind of waiting for the right moment. And every single one of those collectors is going to get a unique iteration of the algorithm that the artist created.
Someone goes to artblocks.io and clicks on, I think, is this the right path? Clicks on collections, curated collections, and sees LoVid's Tide Predictor, they'll see a number of different images. And those are all just theoretical outcomes. Is that true?
So actually, if you head to artblocks.io, you can find LoVid's project within the curated collection designation, but it's also kind of, if you scroll down on the homepage, you'll actually only see mint zero. So that is kind of like, this is the first iteration of the artwork on the public Ethereum blockchain.
Okay.
And every artist has a mint zero, but you can go and see their staging shell, which is on, it's on the blockchain, but it's not actually, not to get too in the weeds, but it's not actually real Ethereum. It's kind of test fake Ethereum, so you can mimic the experience.
Got it.
And you can see what the outputs might look like. And then each kind of output has a rarity assigned to it or certain features. And it all happens on the blockchain.
So Tali and Kyle, tell us a little bit about the project itself. Or a lot. Tell us a lot about the project.
So I guess we can say, well, we, you know, we've been following NFTs and crypto in general for a few years through artists, who friends who were really involved. And then when the kind of boom of whatever it was a couple of years ago happened, we were, you know, kind of taking our time and really developed this like Hugs on Tape series. That was the first works that were, some of them were released as NFTs. And one of the main reason is that we, it was just a very flooded space and everyone was just kind of throwing things and it was really exciting and dynamic. And we wanted to be very thoughtful in how and what we want to do and make it very specific to the idea of Web3 and the possibilities. And one of the really exciting things is generative, you know, script code based work. And ArtBlox is really, you know, a leading force in that, as a platform and a supporter of artists working in the field. So, and when Matt actually approached us to propose a project, it was really exciting. And then it got us really thinking in depth of the relationship between live video and synthesizer-based work to generative art, and really rephrase it, even though, you know, the terms keep changing. If you're like do work long enough, like when we started, everything was like electronic media, then it was new media, now it's digital art. And same thing, you know, we use the term live video from what we're doing, but it is a generative system just using analog equipment. So that was kind of our feeling, was this is our first generative artwork on the blockchain. And so we really wanted to tie it in with our earliest synthesizer based works. And that was is a real kind of entry into this, make a space for what we would want to do from now to the next project. So we actually brought in Douglas Repetto, who we mentioned earlier, a longtime close friend and collaborator. And the one of the great things about working with Douglas is he knows our synthesizer in depth. He has that hardware knowledge and the software code knowledge. And so we really started by saying, okay, we knew we wanted that RGB look, and we had a few old videos that we can use as sketches and bring those and say, okay, we really want something that would look like Lovid video in this new way.
So aside from just looking like it, I think also the sort of conceptual aspects of it were very important for us. So one of the nice things, which relates to your question before, Galen, about the different mints being different from one another and sort of how they're different. And also, again, not to get too far into things here, but basically our work, as I mentioned before, always works with signals, right? So whether they're electrical signals in our analog synthesizers, environmental signals more broadly, some of the work at Wavefarm, biological signals we've used, microenvironmental signals, which impact our analog electronics in real time when we're performing with them, or for our recordings, which are basically documentations of live performances. In this case, using something about the blockchain to regulate some of the random or variable components of the work was a key conceptual feature. And that's something that works very nicely with the ArtBlox platform. So using those signals and then combining that with not just to sort of generate a randomness that's just random, but to generate something that in many ways does similar things aesthetically to what our synthesizers output was very important as well. So there's, you know, minor fluctuations that happen as well as larger scale fluctuations that happen within each of these mints, within each NFT. There's variations that will happen with time and they evolve over time. But even when they're sort of in their more consistent state, which, you know, happens for a matter of, you know, varying time, but could be fractions of a second to seconds. Even within those, there's slight variation, which gives it a little bit of a softer edge and a more of a kind of analog feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to say, so the project just went public, what, 2 days ago? And I've, like, anytime I'm at my desk, I have it open, and I've been spending so much time, and it's a really, really strong project conceptually and visually, and it's just really enthralling and beautiful, but not in, I'm hesitating saying beautiful because I don't, it's deeper than that. It's really, it's provocative, and I'm really excited to be attached to it in whatever way. So thanks for doing something so smart in this sphere, which I think, you know, a lot of people have that aren't totally on board yet have questions about or doubts, or like, I just feel like this project is a real entryway for people who haven't entered yet too.
That's really, I'm so glad to say that. Yeah, sorry, go ahead, Matt.
No, I want to kind of reiterate, it's such a great transposition of, you know, the analog live video work and synthesizing into this new medium. You know, as technology evolves, so does the tools that artists use. You know, if you're kind of hesitant about thinking about art on blockchain, when you zoom out, you can really see a lot of historical precedents to on-chain generative work, from even if you think about like the Bauhaus movement and kind of instructional models or conceptual, you know, concept art and live video art and early net art. There's so many historical precedents and contexts for this medium. And if you're kind of an outsider to this ecosystem and economy around generative art on chain and being released as NFTs, there's a huge fervor around it. And I think that's in large part due to its very much interconnected relationship with art historical movements. So I think there's a lot of possibilities for art on blockchain. You know, the work is the individual mint, but also the algorithms. You can think about where the algorithm could be reapplied in a different site, you know. So yeah, it's just a lot of really fun things to think about. And I'm so happy that Lovid is putting out this project. And I think it's a great entry point for people who may not be familiar with this art movement.
Matt, how many projects has Artblocks put out?
I want to say we're getting over 350. So Artblocks started as an open platform with Eric Calderon, aka Snowfroze, Squiggles, and we've kind of evolved and grown, and now we're really seeking like the best, you know, most conceptually driven, innovative, aesthetically minded, you know, generative works to release. And we're releasing three projects a week now, and almost up on our 2-year anniversary.
That was my next question. And it seems, from what I can gather on your site, that, you know, this is a successful model. The curated projects, you're minting all of them, it looks like. Is that true?
There's two collection designations. So curated status is decided by a board of, you know, international art curators and theorists and people who are really Web3 forward, but also traditional art historians. And they basically vote on a rubric guided by innovation, concept, technical quality, and aesthetics. And they kind of will choose the curated designation. But yeah, I mean, there's a really big community around the artworks. A lot of people who weren't really art connoisseurs kind of came into this space because of the speculative notion of it and stayed for the art. And now there's just kind of people chattering all day about like the aesthetic and conceptual and emotional qualities of a lot of different artworks. And so we're bringing in a lot of people with different perspectives, and it's really engaged collector base because it's very in real time, like supporting an artist's work. And getting to share that experience. So you can have a wide collector base and get to engage with them in real time as projects are minting out.
Yeah. I mean, and from, I can imagine, I mean, it's such a participatory like action to, for a collector to mint, because you're like the choices that person is making at that moment defines the work they end up with. I mean, it's cool.
Yeah.
It's very cool. Can you talk a little bit about the collector community? Is it how international is it? Is it individuals? Is it institutions? Is it all of the above?
Yeah, I would say it's really all of the above. You know, a lot of our artists who are also collectors, you know, that's an international group of people, and it's really a wide range. Like, I wish that I could pin it down, but it's Web3, so we're not really, you know, tracking user profiles and kind of creating like audience personas. So you kind of have to just experience it to see it and feel it. And a lot of that is happening in real life events and also on Discord and Twitter.
Even now, that last one. That's a kind of a nice segue into making sure our listeners know how to experience this work and how to find out more about your particular project, Lovid, Tali and Kyle. Can we remind folks where to go and how to learn more?
Listeners can always get in touch with us on it's at Lovid on any social media, Twitter, Instagram, etc. And you can email us at lovidlovid@gmail.com. You can look at art blocks. Stay tuned. The drop date is this Wednesday, November 2nd. So we're definitely going to be, there's going to be, Matt can tell me exactly what's happening, but we're going to have various little interview and other announcements, I think, coming in the next few days and ways to engage. I actually, you know, really encourage people to join the Art Blocks Discord for this conversation. It is really a really interesting new way to learn about what's going on, learn about new artists, just kind of figure out how things operate, how people are thinking about it. There's various channels, some range from, you know, historical history of media art, and then some just kind of live constant chat and reactions to things going on. It's a very vivid, exciting community. So also I would just encourage anyone interested to take a peek at that.
And I'll put these links in the audio archive of this broadcast too, for folks, if anyone listening is looking for more information and not familiar with Discord or needs a reminder. Is there anything else our listeners should know?
Yeah, if you want to learn more about Art Blocks, I recommend going to Art Blocks, ArtBlocks, like building blocks, .io. There's a whole overview of how the generative art process works, and links to all of our socials. And we just released an info site with, you know, interviews with artists, kind of documenting our history. And it's a really great resource if you're just getting into it, and Tide Predictor will drop